bad days, but stay living on good times. But when the cup's dried up, fill another ride up and let it just slide. Ain't having no
bad. You know who has no bad days? That's Coach Prime. Coach Prime, he'll tell you. Only great days. Before we get to the Buffs, Matt Smith in for Zach Pye. This spring, Zach and Phil, they're hitting the streets, folks. You know Zach. He likes to hit them streets. Same with Phil. They're taking the show on the road. It's the Drive's Brouhaha. Their first stop in Edgewater at Edgewater Beer Garden. Friday, April 19th from 2 to 6 p.m. Head to denversports.com/the drive for more details. Edgewater, April 419. You know, you're drinking on 419, and then the next day... Well, something a little different. All right, let's go up to Boulder, where, you know, something a little different will be going on that day.
Yeah.
So I told you before the break that I have figured out at least one of the biggest goals for me personally over the course of this spring, you know, football for CU was to figure out what went wrong last year, because we got bits and pieces, but they played their cards pretty close to the vest last year. So one of my biggest curiosities is what was going on with running the ball. Because it wasn't like they just flat out couldn't run the ball. In fact, when they did, there were times when they were reeling off like 4 yards per carry. It wasn't bad, but they just never committed. They just never committed to it.
Yeah.
And every time we asked Coach Prime, he'd go, oh, no, we tried. But it would be like one carry, and then he got dissuaded. And so I think, as Neil says here, okay, and I think this is where – a lot of people feel, you know, at least about the program. Neil on the text line says, CU didn't run the ball a whole lot because they were focused with showcasing Shador and Travis Hunter. That's the problem when your head coach is a dad first, coach second. I know he's not calling plays on game day, but they run whatever scheme Prime wants, and he's throwing the ball a ton. I appreciate the engagement, Neil. That isn't it. You know, I know a lot of people feel that way, but what I have learned over the course of the last 5 months is it was the scheme, okay? It was the scheme they were running was a bad fit. When they went out and they hired Sean Lewis, who was the offensive coordinator to start the year last year for Coach Prime.
Yeah, head coach of San Diego State now.
Head coach at SDSU now, but they hired him as the head coach from Kent State.
Yeah.
So he left his position as a head coach to come over. And when I asked Dion at the beginning of the year, what was it about Sean Lewis that made him the right guy? He said that he was looking for somebody to bring into the system that could elevate everything to the next level.
Yeah.
Because he recognized that stepping up a level, they needed to elevate what they did offensively. So they brought in Sean Lewis, brought in his RPO-style offense, and we learned this week from Coach Gary Flea Harrell.
What's the running back coach?
Running back coach, that they didn't really have specific runs last year. No designed runs.
Yeah.
It was all based in the RPO sets.
Yeah, that's hard to do.
It's hard to do, especially when you're talking about a brand new team, Phil. It's not like these guys have been playing together for 3-4 years.
No. The RPO, Matt, with the RPO on top of that, is it's a run pass option. Therefore, the offensive line doesn't know what's happening. The offensive line, if they're thinking it's a run and they're going down the field, it's a penalty. But if they sit here and they think it's a pass when it's really a run, they're just sitting in the way. It's hard. I've never liked the RPO as a play that's just consistently
as a
what
base,
you're going to run. Yeah,
as
a base foundation of what you're going to do.
Yeah. And I think for Shador, it was a challenge, okay? It was a challenge. First of all, he had to play Power 5 football, which he had never done before. Bigger, faster, stronger. We know what comes with that. So that was a bit of an adjustment. Second part was everything was on his shoulders. So not only does the offensive line not know what you're doing, your receivers don't know what you're doing, and your running back doesn't know what you're doing, and your quarterback has to make all these reads on the fly, which, look, I mean, there's something to be said for having some of those concepts in your offense. But as you just brought up astutely, having that as your base, well, look, it's 3rd and 1. I don't need to be reading this DN. Let's just line up and run this sucker, okay?
Especially twice. Especially if you have a good offensive line.
They didn't. So I think that was a bit of a problem, right? Yeah. So essentially what their running backs coach, Gary Flea Harrell, told us this week was that it was the scheme. That the scheme didn't have any designed runs. That in all of these critical moments, so much was on Shador's plate and no one else was on the same page, because Shador was the one who had to make all the decisions, that it just never ended up working out.
For sure.
That, look, I mean, there was frustration in the running back room because we don't know what to expect. And Shador wasn't great at it. Let's just call it what it is.
Which is, it's fine. And on top of that, you're giving so much, like, leeway to a young man, a kid. That's what it is, where there's no structure, where it's not like, hey, this is what it's supposed to look like. This is what I want done. Not every so often, go off script, do what you want to do, but this is what it has to look like. Not just, hey, you go out there and be Peyton Manning.
Mm-hmm.
Like, there's only one Peyton Manning that could do that and create his own plays. So that's kind of interesting in itself.
And it makes sense if you think about it, because there's a lot of, like, obvious run situations last year where they didn't run the ball.
Yeah,
they just had Shador throw. But a lot of that was on Shador. And Shador's going to want to make a play.
For sure.
You know what I mean? And the other part of it is he didn't really commit to selling the run fake.
Yeah.
One of my biggest criticisms of him last year.
You've been saying that a lot last year and this year.
He didn't commit. Every time he, you know, feigned to hand off to the running back, you're like, oh, no, you're not doing that.
For sure.
I mean, it took him until like week 6 or 7 to pull the ball and run it finally when they realized they had to find some sort of way.
You have to pull too, man. Like, you have to give that option of, I can hand the ball off, I can keep it, I can throw it. If you don't ever keep the ball, then they're going to crash down on your running back, or they're just going to bail back for that pass.
And a reminder here, we're talking about running this system with a completely new team. Yes. Guys who have not played together other than for 6 months.
But they were the Louis, though.
Yeah, I know.
They're supposed to be the Louis.
I know they brought their Louis. And look, I'm not giving them excuses, because up there you won't hear that it was on Shador. Yes. That is one thing, to Texter's point. You're not going to hear players, you know, and coaches go, oh, well, our quarterback struggled with X read.
For sure.
They're going to talk about the scheme, but we know what that means. So Shador and Sean Lewis didn't have a great relationship, because Sean didn't want to change anything to kind of fit Shador's strength.
Yeah.
And Shador didn't fully commit to buy into their system. So it makes sense that eventually the bill came due with how they played offense. They hung 29 in the first half, 29-0 against Stanford. And then Stanford solved them.
Yeah.
They're like, oh, okay, you're just not going to pull the ball. You're not going to run the ball.
Exactly.
Well, we're just going to sit in coverage. And then they stormed back down 29. Yeah.
Bad defense, too. Oof.
And the reason that Sean Lewis got fired is because after the Stanford game, with the biggest blown lead in school history, they had a couple weeks off with the bye week. Then they went out to UCLA. And Phil?
Pooped the bed.
Buddy, he didn't change anything. Yeah. He had 2 weeks to self-scout, evaluate, and he marched out the same stuff. And UCLA was like, bet. I saw all this on film. Like, here we go. And they killed Shador as a result. I mean, they killed him. That was the worst game for the offensive line all year. So
tell me this. Pat Shurmur.
Yeah.
What is different at this point then, Matt, with Pat Shurmur, what you've seen up there? Because Pat has been ran off multiple times.
No question.
From the NFL level, which we all know the NFL level is a different beast, right? He hasn't been in college since
25 years.
I don't think I was born yet.
25 years, you know, before he got the job at the beginning of the year, had he been in the college game.
And so it's like, okay, why him? Out of everybody, Pat Shurmur.
So that RPO system that we're talking about, that's college. That's college stuff, right? Yep. That's what you're going to see, spread offense. That stuff, nobody in the NFL is running strictly RPO.
No, once in a while.
Well, you've got some of those concepts involved. Yeah. You know, you've got things like, you'll see Mahomes.
You got it in your bag at times, but yeah, it's not a base play.
It's not your base offense, right? Well, now what they're going to do is they're going to run a pro-style offense. You're going to see spread out, because that's what Shurmur likes to do, but you are going to see more under center. You're going to see more designed runs. And one of the big goals this year is to utilize each player's skill sets the way that they're supposed to be, rather than trying to shoehorn them into their system.
That's why I have an issue with Matt, is because for me, and like I said, maybe it's different, because even with Saquon over there with the Giants, and again, this is the NFL, the biggest thing with Saquon, I feel like he said, and he's kind of told me before, was he felt that Shurmur never put him in always the best situation to be successful with what he did best. Well, I got to see that with myself, you know, especially because it's like, dude, you're running me up the middle like I'm 230 pounds. You're not letting me get no balls catching. I can catch, but you guys have it under me as I can't, so that you guys don't have to pay me, kind of thing. So it was just one of those things. Was like, he didn't put me in a good situation. He didn't put Jerry. Obviously, Jerry went out there and said what he said. People,
I mean, he had Jerry doing the fake jet sweeps to nowhere.
You know what I
remember?
Mean?
Yeah.
And so I just don't – I want to see where all of a sudden he's like, I'm going to put everybody and be creative and put everybody in the right situations to be successful.
I think he's learned, Phil. Because Dylan Edwards, we spoke to Dylan Edwards. We all remember Dylan Edwards, the speedy running back who had 4 touchdowns against TCU to open the season, right?
Game one.
They nicknamed
never seen him again.
Yeah, well, they nicknamed him every day in camp. Well, the part of the reason you never saw him – you never really saw him hit again is because they kept running him into the back of the center. Well, guess what they're not going to do this year? They're not going to do that. They're going to do the things that make sense for their players. And talking to Dylan, you know, he's talking about, hey, I'm playing a lot more receiver this year, yeah, which makes sense. And I'm not going to be running up. Even Dylan himself said, I'm not going to be running up behind the center this year. I can't do that.
Yeah.
I think what Pat has done is he's learned from some of those experiences where he's failed. Because, look, I mean, even 25 years in, you can still teach an old dog new tricks. I'm not saying it's going to be perfect. But you know when the dog wants to be taught? When it didn't work the way before. When it didn't work the way before, and now you're looking for somebody else to go, oh, okay, you've got the experience at this level and at that level, and what you're having us do makes a lot more sense logically than what we were being asked to do before. Because, again, you brought it up. You're playing with brand new teammates. You're playing in a system where your offensive line doesn't know what is going to happen.
Yeah.
And unless your quarterback is out there just dealing every single play and is fully committed to the RPO, and it wants to pull it sometimes, you're probably not going to have a ton of success doing that. And so what they're saying with Shurmur now is that Shurmur is not only, like you said, putting players in positions to succeed, but he's utilizing guys' skill sets to their advantage within the scheme. So, look, am I sitting here going to tell you that it's going to be perfect, that it's going to be great? Well, no, I don't know. But everything I'm hearing logically makes sense based upon what I saw last year and what the issues were and those that needed to be addressed. It feels to me, Phil, at least offensively, you've got more talent. The one thing I'll tell you, your boys, Jeremy Irwin, Jonathan Hawkins, Alex Kelly, the offensive line that you had in 2016, all those boys were up there at practice yesterday.
Yeah.
They could not stop raving about the offensive line.
Good.
They're mean. They're nasty. They love Jordan Seaton, the five-star left tackle.
Yeah.
The freshman. I think they've rebuilt a lot of things. They're approaching this year with a better plan, number one, to have everybody on the same page. Because I don't know if you remember the USC game, but Colorado's down, what was it, 44 to
34. That was a good game. I remember it, man. Like, I was actually at Fox Sports with one of the quarterbacks back in the day.
Yeah.
We were talking about it and watching it together, and we came rallying back and made it a game.
So it's 44 to 34 late in the game. Colorado gets the ball back 6 minutes and they're driving. Well, it's taken them forever to go down the field. They got the ball back with 6 minutes left. They didn't score till 1:50 left on the clock, which is unacceptable. You've got to be in two-minute drill. You've got to be moving the ball down the field. So you do have an opportunity to get the ball back.
For sure.
Well, after the game, the first thing I asked Shador was, why did it take so long? Like, everything looked like it took so long. Well, now it makes sense. And after the game, Shador told me, hey, if I snap the ball there, we're not on the same page. What, do you want me to snap the ball and then we got a penalty? Or snap the ball and then this receiver's running the wrong route? Phil, too much was on his plate last year.
Way too much.
Way too much. And that's not going to be the way it is this year. So now you're going to have guys on the same page to the point where, we're down 10 at home. I can run the two-minute drill. And they went down. They scored. They almost beat USC if they didn't spot them 21 points. So I think there are things there. It's just more about putting the players in logical situations. And I'll tell you, right now I'm encouraged, okay? I'm not sitting here going to promise you they're going to be world beaters.
No, for sure.
I'm sitting here encouraged that the stuff they're going to do is logical.
It's
going to
be better fit for everybody on the team. The only question I'm going to leave you with and the listeners with is, how patient is Coach Prime going to be if they don't start winning, if they don't start moving the ball?
Mm.
How patient is Coach Prime going to be knowing that Travis Hunter and his son, Shador Sanders, his precious too, if they're not doing well because of whatever the case may be, it's just not the rhythm's not there. We're just not moving the ball well. How much patience will he have with Pat Shurmur?
We told you we're coming. We told you we're coming. You thought we were joking. And guess what? We keep receipts.
Mm. Well, we'll dive into the defense a little bit later in the show because I think there's some big changes defensively too. But it is interesting to hear all that stuff because for me, it just didn't make sense. Yeah. Run the ball. Commit to running the football.
Yeah, you gotta
it's
run
just not
ball.
That hard.
Got to run the ball.
Look at Phil Lindsay. I mean, get you a Phil Lindsay back there. Feed this guy the ball. All right, on the other side, a little law and order. I don't know if you've been paying attention to what's going on with Shohei Ohtani, but this is a story. That's next.
It's almost here.
I can't wait. You made it.
Almost touch it.
You made it. Or you almost made it. We're almost there. Almost there. The Fan Flyaway is back, and this time, folks, We're sending one lucky listener and a guest to a road game for the Pro Basketball Championship in June. I think we all know what I'm talking about there. I just can't talk about it, but I can talk about it, you know?
A little bit.
Here's what you're going to get. Peek. Two tickets to a game. Round-trip airfare for two from Denver to a destination to be determined. I don't know, Boston, Philly, I don't know, Milwaukee. Who knows how it finishes out? Two nights hotel and $500. Head to denversports.com/thefanflyaway to register and claim your special offer from Sport Clips. Those of you, though, who had previously registered, we know a lot of you did when we had our fan flyaway to Vegas for the big game. Well, you're already a part of the club. No need to sign up again. You will be entered into this one if you signed up for a previous fan flyaway. But now, obviously, new one. It is the fan flyaway presented by Sport Clips. That sounds fun, man. I mean, are you kidding me? That's a nice little package right there. I would absolutely sign up for that one.
Yes.
DenverSports.com. Okay. So, it's time to figure out what's going on with Shohei Ohtani here, because this is a mess.
In the criminal justice system, the people are represented by two separate yet equally important groups: the police who investigate crime and the district attorneys who prosecute the offenders. These are their stories.
Shohei, he's in hot water now.
Oh,
well,
man.
I don't know if he's in hot water or it's his buddy. So you've heard about Shohei's interpreter, right?
Yeah.
Ipe Mizuhara.
Okay.
Okay. He's been interpreting for Shohei Ohtani since he came over from Japan. Well, this guy, we had heard that he had stolen some money, and then they changed the story and said that Shohei actually didn't know about that, and Shohei originally allegedly paid off the money with his knowledge, but then they're saying he stole his money. So it was very confusing.
So well, came right back to a full circle.
Yeah, so yesterday we got some more details, and you want to talk about a problemo? This guy has one. So apparently, over the total scope of Mizuhara, the interpreter, we're going to call him Ipe. His first name's Ipe. So Ipe. So the total amount that he gambled here, okay? He won $142 million.
Ooh, he won.
But also lost $180 plus million. We're talking about an interpreter here, okay? I'm not talking about some billionaire. I'm not talking about Shohei, I don't think. Or maybe we are, but it's
a little something.
I don't know. I'm not sure. Although, it feels like if you're going to have a fall guy who's looking to do a 30 bid, I don't know. I don't know. You have any friends that would sit on a 30 bid for you?
Oh, no.
Yeah, no. I don't know. I don't either. So, essentially, net losses of about $40 million, okay, over a 3-4 year period.
That's wild.
Wild for this guy to be betting this kind of coin. Wild. So essentially, what they're saying is that there was an illegal bookmaker in California, and the reason why this is illegal is because he was betting in the state of California. Not because sports betting is legal everywhere, but in California it is. So he was betting through an illegal bookmaker. And allegedly, the interpreter and the bookmaker were the ones that were having all the correspondence, not Ohtani, right? Because, you know, I mean, it was his own little, you know, on the side, little problem.
Yeah, make sure he covers himself.
Yeah. So essentially, ranging from one bet as small as $10 to all the way up to $160,000, those were the type of numbers he was betting. And he just kept losing and losing and losing. And essentially, let me read you a little bit of the text message conversation, and you'll start to get it. Mizuhara messages the bookmaker asking him to reduce his credit from 300 grand to 100 grand because, quote, I'll get too reckless with 300, he says. You might want to take a look in the mirror. Okay. And even though he kept losing, they kept increasing his bet limits, increasing his credit, because they knew he'd be good for it.
Yeah.
Which this is where people are raising an eyebrow and going, well, why would they think that you were good for it?
Yeah, why would you continue to raise it?
That makes sense.
It doesn't.
It doesn't make sense at all. Well, it kept happening. He kept losing. And then he'd get a text, hey, can you just bump me again? This is what happens when you start chasing hard gambling. This is, if you want to read a what not to do or the possible negative outcomes and repercussions of sports gambling, this guy is to the extreme of what can happen to you. So, apparently, the account that he was pulling out of from Shohei didn't have access to. Let me ask you, how many times are you checking your bank account?
Every second, if I can.
Do you check it all the time?
I check it. For me, I check it at least once or twice a week. My wife checks it every day.
Okay. Well, if you've got the kind of coin that Shohei has.
Yeah, you have to check it every day.
Well, it'll be in there. My money guys do it. I mean, we hear stories all the time. I'm sure you know guys who got taken advantage of by managers or financial advisors.
That's why you check it every day. Come on, Shohei.
I don't know.
Let me be your manager.
You trying to skim off the top too, just like Ipe, huh?
It seems like everybody's getting in on a little fun.
Mm-hmm. Well, Ipe just turned himself in, okay? So allegedly, he only had to cover $16 million. He could cover, remember we talked about, $40 million in net losses. So allegedly, this interpreter just had $25 floating around? He was making a salary of like $100,000.
Yeah, that...
Apparently, he only stole about 16. These numbers adding up to you?
No, they're not.
Shohei could be in some hot water here. I think when the bottom of this story comes out, because it came out that he stole like $4 million. Well, now we're talking about stealing $16
million. So do you think that Shohei's the one that's doing it? And he's just kind of... And I don't want to put words in your mouth.
I don't know what's happening here. I genuinely don't. We're talking about, is he the fall guy? Is he not? I'll say the FBI and the federal investigators seem to think that he's not involved whatsoever. But some of these text messages, I don't know anybody who's going to text their bookie. I'm terrible at this sports betting thing, huh? LOL.
Really? And they keep getting bumped.
And keep getting bumped. But it was never baseball. So somehow they managed to steer clear of that. It was apparently all soccer. For the most part. You believe in him?
No, I'm not. Come on now, Matt. Look at all this that's going on.
It's fishy, isn't it?
It's really fishy.
A little fishy.
He's one of the greatest players to play in the MLB. So they're going to make sure they try everything they can to cover this up.
Let me read you the last part of this from ESPN here. On March 20th, news breaks that at least $4.5 million was transmitted from Ohtani's account to the bookmaker's operation. Ipe first tells ESPN that Ohtani paid his debts before changing his story hours later to say that Ohtani had no knowledge of his gambling. Ipe then asked his bookmaker if he'd seen the media reports saying that they were involved. The bookmaker responds, "Yeah, that's all BS. Obviously, you didn't steal from him. I understand it's a cover job. I totally get it." That's what the bookmaker said to the interpreter. The interpreter responded with, "Technically, I did steal from him. It's all over for me."
Wow.
Hey, here's just a little piece of advice on the way out the door. You commit crimes, don't be texting about it, dog.
Yeah.
Don't be texting
about it. Today's world.
Not on the phone. Don't be... I mean, come on.
In person. Don't even write a letter.
Keep your house clean. This is Law and Order. The Drive Edition. This is when music peaks. I'm just kidding.
I love this song, man.
This is a great song.
I played this song. It was our Little League Super Bowl, and I had this playing in the car.
You remember that all the way back then, huh?
Birdman, Dad, I'm number one.
That's right. You know, I've got this iPod Nano that was probably from like 07, 08.
Uh-huh.
I stopped updating it in like 2011. So it is literally a time capsule just back to high school, okay? I found it the other day and I threw it in the charger. I won't last through the apocalypse, but that little iPod will, and just all jams. So whatever alien finds it, you know, after the apocalypse, they're going to be like,
"What is this?
Oh, banger after banger on this." That's exactly what they need to do to, get accustomed with what kind of music we got down here on Earth. You don't need to listen to any of these new guys?
No, this is different. This rapping stuff is different nowadays. Every once in a while, like, I'll listen to a beat and like a beat, but like overall, it's not good.
They don't have a lot of talent anymore. Where's the art?
There's no art.
Where's the art, KJ? It's gone.
They don't have art. They don't believe in art. They skip art class.
That's right. They skip the art class.
Throw something on a disc or CD or whatever. Call it a day. A track.
So we talked a little bit earlier. There is a new report out that says Sean Payton, surprise, surprise, is desperate for a quarterback. We knew that, right? Desperate. So this is Paul Allen, okay? And this is coming out of Minnesota. He says the Broncos are desperate to trade up for a quarterback, specifically J.J. McCarthy. Denver is so desperate they could possibly include star corner Patrick Surtain in a trade, including several other first-round picks. Let me just ask you, how would you feel if Denver moved PS2 and let's just say a pick swap for this year and maybe next year's first for J.J. McCarthy to get up to like 4?
I'm not liking it. Not for J.J. McCarthy. Am I willing to give up PS2 and you said another in a first?
In a first? You're giving him 12 this
12
year and next PS2. Year's first.
Okay, see, in PS2.
Yeah.
Oh, no.
Well, that's what they're talking about. You realize they're also talking about the Broncos pick swapping this year and then giving 2 firsts to move up.
Yeah, I don't like any of that moving up and giving away our draft capital and giving up the only player that's on our team that's worth anything. I just don't, for J.J. McCarthy, you know, it'd be different if it was like Caleb Williams. Agreed. And we all knew that. Like, it's like, okay, Caleb Williams, like, you know, there's something to it. He could be that generational talent. But, like, Matt, J.J. McCarthy came out of nowhere. Like, he was supposed to be a second-round draft pick, and everybody got on board. It's a copycat league. Just like it's a copycat league in the media world, right? Someone says something, they catch wind to it, and now everybody's writing the same thing, not doing their homework. Mm. It's the same thing in the NFL.
This isn't the first time we've heard that Sean is in love with McCarthy, though.
No, we've heard that
multiple times. Multiple times. And then we heard from Sean himself at the Combine that they didn't even go to McCarthy's pro day, but they had their own private workout next day.
Too much information.
And they made him throw all over again, as Sean was all proud to tell our own Cecil Lammy at DenverSports.com. Well, you know our buddy Joel Klatt, right?
Yeah.
You know, pride of CU Boulder. He obviously is Fox's number one color guy on all their college broadcasts, and he spent a ton of time broadcasting Michigan games in J.J. McCarthy's career. Well, Joel has a podcast, The Joel Klatt Show, and he's obviously been going through his list of quarterbacks and working on his big board. And there's some comments here about J.J. McCarthy because, look, if you are going to move Surtain and several firsts, this guy, I mean, you better be convinced that this guy will transform your franchise. Here's Joel.
I've seen J.J. McCarthy since he was just a pup. When he comes in as a true freshman, he's getting spot duty with Cade McNamara. And he grew into a guy that was the reason they were able to go win a national championship.
Okay. He completed 10 passes in the national title game.
Don't get me started.
He wasn't the reason.
He had 2 stud running backs, a hell of an offensive line, and that defense. Come on.
All right, let's see if Joel can convince us on the other side, because he said a few more things already.
I'm almost about to walk out. I'm about to walk out the door.
Not off to a good start here. It's a fan.
So we back in the club with the bodies rocking from side to side, Thank God the
Matt Smith and for Zach Bye. Phil Lindsay rounding out your week. You made it to the weekend.
Pretty much.
Yeah. I mean, we didn't, but they did. I mean, work's almost over. You're in your car driving home. I know 25's a parking lot. I don't even need to see it to know that. Thanks for rocking with us.
Yeah. Listen to the sounds of our voice.
Yeah. You know, we were talking before the break about J.J. McCarthy because the latest rumor is Sean is thirsty. Sean's thirsty for a little J.J., all right? He is desperado to go get a quarterback in the first round this year. And not only have we heard that from reports, clearly the Broncos need somebody else in that quarterback room, but we also spoke to our Broncos 9 News insider Mike Kliss a little bit earlier, and Kliss told us that if the Broncos get their way and things go well in the first round of the draft, they come away with a quarterback. And you and I were just having the conversation. Based upon this report, Paul Allen of Minnesota Radio, okay, which it's always odd when you go to a different state to get an insider's report on what's going on in your state. But to the Broncos' credit, not a lot is getting out of Dove Valley right now. So we're just, you know, kind of going off of, you know, this report or that report. And I mean, I think you can feel however you want to feel about it. The fact that teams can't nail the Broncos down as far as what they want to do, it probably alludes to the fact that there's a lot to accomplish. So yeah, people could see them going in any sort of direction, or, right?
Sean knows what he wants and won't tell nobody.
And Sean's being quiet about it. Does that sound like Sean?
Yeah, it sounds like Sean. You know, it sounds like someone that doesn't really trust everybody in the building. Now, he trusts the people he just hired. Rager. Is it Rager or Rager?
Rager.
Rager.
Rager. Mr. Rager.
Yep. Kid Cudi.
Yep. Oh, I know it well. I know it well.
You know, like, maybe people like that know.
Mm-hmm.
But maybe nobody really truly knows what Sean is thinking. He does. He probably has a, like, draft day. There's probably a note in his pocket of who he's going to draft.
Always Vontae Mac.
Always.
Always.
That's
Mac.
A good one. I keep telling Zach that he needs to watch it.
Zach never seen Draft Day. It is, I mean, it's, if you want to laugh, you watch Draft Day.
I liked it.
Mom, we're having a baby. You're like 65, Kevin Costner. Okay. Yeah, yeah, that is a, that's a good one if you want a good chuckle, that's for sure. So we were talking about J.J. McCarthy because per this report, Paul Allen from, again, Minnesota Radio is saying that the Broncos are not afraid, if they need to move up, maybe even include Pat Surtain in a deal.
Yeah.
And a couple of firsts, which if you're going to do that, you and I both agree, you got to have somebody. I mean, you got to be convinced that this is your dude, right? And a couple of texts on the text line before we get back to Joel Klatt's comments here. Anybody with common sense knows you don't get rid of a proven young player to draft a question mark. I tend to agree with Texter. Hey. Another texter says, if it's Sean Payton's guy, go for it. We all know you'll never get that chance to get your guy again. Plus, the picks don't mean anything if you don't have a quarterback. And P.S., we can't win a championship with the best cornerback in the league, says Brian and Thornton. So a couple of things here from Brian. Never be in this position again. So if they move up for J.J. McCarthy, how many wins, Phil, would you anticipate?
Even with J.J. McCarthy, Matt? Him being, what, 21 years old?
Sure.
He may not even start the year off. Mm-hmm. Okay, let's just say he comes in week 5. They're probably only going to win 5 or 6 games.
You know what the over-under on win total is for the Broncos this year?
Was it like 5?
5.5. 5.5. Okay?
Makes sense.
Yeah, and that's Vegas factoring in that they may draft a quarterback. So, you sure you won't be in this spot again? Or might you be in a better position next year? I got news for you. If you only win 5, 6 games, you'll be right back in the top 10, at least in that conversation.
And you have your draft picks to do it.
And you have your draft picks to do it because you didn't over-leverage yourself. All right, so at least we got, there's a couple of different ways. So let's get back to Joel because, look, if you're going to make a move, you better be sure that this is the guy. Now, the one soundbite we heard from Joel told us that, look, I mean, J.J. was the guy that was able to lead Michigan to a championship.
Yeah. He was a puppy that he's seen.
Yeah, that he's seen
grow.
Since the start when he split time with Cade McNamara over there in Michigan. Well, I mean, we kind of have to have some context here, Joel. McCarthy completed 10 passes in the national championship game.
It blows my mind, Matt. It's like they dogged Michael Penix Jr. Because of him getting hit and, you know, injured, whatever the case may be.
Because he's got like 4 season-ending injuries in his career, whatever. Yeah.
But 2 years, he's been pretty healthy. But then again, J.J. McCarthy didn't do anything so incredible in that game.
All right, well, let's listen to Joel. Let's hear what Joel has to say. Let's let Joel Klatt make his case.
They've had teams that did what this team has done in every other facet other than crunch time, fourth quarter, can the quarterback go win the game? You know it's true. Michigan has had really great teams for a long time under Jim Harbaugh, but they didn't always have the quarterback that could raise the level of the team when they needed it most. And guess what? He was able to do that in the Rose Bowl against Alabama.
Well, that part I agree with.
He made some good throws against Alabama.
No question. And they have had really good teams in the past and just haven't been able to get it done. Would you say that J.J. McCarthy was the reason they got over the top, or was it their running game and their defense?
I would say it's their running game and their defense. And then having someone like J.J. McCarthy there to orchestrate everything. What'd you say, orchestrate?
Yeah.
Orchestrate everything, kind of make sure everything's on time. And it make a couple big plays when it matters the most. But overall, it's the running game and keeping it on the ground and that amazing defense they had last year.
Right. But I will say, to Joel's point, like you just mentioned, you got to make some throws, right? You got to make – but compared to what Penix was doing, I would say McCarthy's maybe have to and, you know, need to have this throw like 5 to 7 times a game, whereas maybe Penix – 15 times a game, well, have to have it.
Man. It's like, I feel like we have dug so deep to find the great stuff that J.J. McCarthy has done. Mm. Where someone like Michael Penix Jr., he's done it so much because he's throwing so much more that it's just like in front of you, so you don't have to kind of dig as deep to try to find out about this man and say, oh, well, you have to dig deep to really know that he's going to be really good. Like, what is that?
Yeah, but I think also part of it is it's different stylistically. I mean, you're not going to be asked to do the same exact things in every system, for certainly. Sure. And Michigan had a better overall team than Washington did. Yeah. I mean, that's just the way it is. All right, Joel continues.
And I'll say, okay, I want to watch just J.J. McCarthy on third downs and 7+. And when you do that, basically hardest down to play as a quarterback. When you watch his cut up at third down 7+, it's like, wow. Why is he not a top 5 player? And you know what? Fair enough. Maybe I'm too low on J.J. McCarthy.
Hmm. I mean, this is not what Joel was saying, by the way, at the beginning of this process.
Yeah.
Because I spoke with Joel filling in for Mike and Mark. These were not the same comments. So after more film review, he's loving what he's seeing.
On thaw a little bit.
Yeah. Yeah. And somebody on the text line goes, why is Joel some sort of quarterback expert? Buddy, Joel has called more games, specifically at J.J. McCarthy, than anybody you're going to find, and he happens to be an evaluator. That's why he's an expert. And oh, by the way, he played the position. So am I saying that I'm going to take what Joel says as gospel? No, but I think it is important in the context of this conversation, somebody who's seen him, not some sort of NFL draft evaluator, you know, love Cecil, but it's not Cecil talking about him. Cecil watched him, right? Combine, stuff like that. It's not that guy. It's a guy who saw him in college and now has seen what he's been able to do there and been there in person live watching. I mean, how many games do you think Joel's called for Michigan over J.J. McCarthy's career? Like 20+ at least? So... yeah, I'm going to listen to Joel and at least take his opinion into account. He finishes here on McCarthy.
When he had the ability to change the game on third downs, extend plays, make plays on the edge, create, throw on the run, use his leg to move the chains, he did it. He did it. That's why he's going to be great at the next level. And, oh, hey, by the way, totally unselfish, doesn't care who gets the credit and is just flat a winner. Who doesn't want that in the locker room?
A lot of good stuff there, Phil. A lot of good stuff. I mean, that's one perspective, certainly.
For sure.
But we're talking about, hey, if you're going to be willing to leverage your first-round pick or in some sort of pick swap this year, maybe even Patrick Surtain plus 1 to 2 more first-round picks, boy, you better be convinced. You better be convinced.
So after listening to Joe, are you convinced? Like say that you're Sean.
Mm-hmm.
And now you have to give up those 2 first rounds in Pat Surtain after listening to what Joel just said. Are you convinced?
It depends upon if Sean's in love. I mean, look, it's you'll do some crazy things when you're head over heels. And look, Sean is probably thinking, hey, I'm not really trying to wait around. I want to win now. So I could see this being true. I just struggle. I really struggle to see how giving up a top 5 pick, because you have to remember, if you're trading 2025's pick, it's probably going to be in the top 10. So are you willing
because you're
to,
only going to win 5 games. Are you
willing to give up 12, a top 10 pick next year, and Patrick Surtain?
Yeah.
For the 4th quarterback off the board, maybe 3rd?
And that's kind of what I've said to Zach before, too. It's like, what if we don't win 5 games? What if we're not, and what if we could be really good, but what if we're really, really bad?
Could they be really good? Hold on. Could they be really good? Is that an outcome that could possibly happen?
I don't know. You look at Houston, Matt, and you look at them getting the right quarterback.
Mm-hmm.
All right, I'm being optimistic.
No, you're being very optimistic. I despise this example.
To me, they don't have enough pieces around to say that they're going to be really good this year. If they had all the pieces around, they just needed a quarterback, I would say, yeah. Also, all they're missing is a quarterback. But we're having so many pieces that are missing from the defensive side, and especially on the offensive side, that it's like, I don't think that they would be good.
What's their ceiling, even with J.J.?
Their ceiling with J.J.
Ooh. Like 7-8 wins?
I would say 8 wins.
Okay. Well, you're not getting in the playoffs.
Well, no. You're kind of back in the situation where you're in no man's land.
Yet. Really? Okay. I'm with you. Okay? So you'd be in no man's land, then not having that first round pick next year and having to go to free agency while you're still saddled with the 32
yeah.
of the 80 whatever, of the 85 of that you had to deal with Russ that you didn't take on this year. I don't know, man. You're going to be leveraging several very high first round picks for a guy who isn't consensus, not even 1, 2, and for a lot of people, not even 3.
He's the 4th.
So I don't know if it happens. I don't know if it happens, but it's interesting to consider, Phil. That's for sure.